information is free.
The law.
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
We care. And it shows.
The law.
The country.
You will remember nothing you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, it made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
And I looked, and behold, a big blue horse. And he who sat upon it was named Death, and hell followed with him. Welcome, my friends, to episode 114 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's March 6, 2009. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster. News, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups are always the order of the day. And on this episode, we investigate the CFR and the coup of 2012, pack attacks, Chicago nukes, banana republics and politics, global banks and global currency, XE, FCS, GPS, P2P, the New World Order, and the New World Airport. March 6th, 2009, episode 114 of MediaMonarchy.com.
Yeah.
The laws have changed. That's old music from the new Pornographers, from the record Electric Version, which of course you heard there featuring prominently Nico Case. We heard brand new music from Nico Case on the B-side, 113 of MediaMonarchy.com, where, among other things, we went over dangerous gateway drugs like violent video games, pirate radio, bloggers as journalists, MK Agriculture, e-cigarettes, legalization, and a million dead Iraqis. That's the B-side of episode 113. However, this is episode 114 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's March 6, 2009. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster, coming to you, as always, live every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific time from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, and thanks to the worldwide home of free speech, revereradionetwork.com, 1 p.m. on the East Coast, thanks to KBFR 93.9 in Boulder, Colorado, and Free Radio Olympia 98.5 in Olympia, Washington. I also want to give a big thanks to Glenn at Cascadia Public Radio for reposting episodes of Media Monarchy from right out here in Portland, Oregon. And again, you can make contact with me here in Portland, Oregon, using FaceSpace, YouTube, Yahoo, IM, and Skype, iTunes, RadioForAll.net, and Archive.org. And of course, Twitter and all the other little social networking bells and whistles that are mere tools to getting this information out. Portland Radio Authority is moving locations very soon. Next week will be the last Media Monarchy episode in this space. It'll be Friday the 13th. Right before the Ides of March, episode 115 with, I believe, a very special guest in studio. So that's next week. And then the week after that, on the 20th, Portland Radio Authority will be in its new location. But right now, we're here. It's 10 o'clock in the morning on the West Coast. And we got a lot of bad news to cover. So let's just glance at Google News right now. We, of course, have the Obamasiah speaking at a healthcare summit. U.S. unemployment rate jumps to 8.1%. This is from the Washington Post. People across the country search for jobs as, for the first time on record, all 50 states report increased unemployment rates. Comments that include profanity or personal attacks or other inappropriate comments or material will be removed from this site. I'm sure the Washington Post didn't mean for that bit to be up on the front page of Google News right now. But stupid me just read it for you. Never before have all 50 states had increased unemployment rates. But of course, if you listen to the Obamasiah, there's 57 states. And Ruth Madoff says that her 62 million is totally unrelated to her husband's fraudulent Madoff Ponzi scheme. We also have from Reuters Merrill Lynch noting a trading irregularity in the London Stock Exchange. And we can also see that Ron Paul is going to be on the CNN show D.L. Hughley Breaks the News. However, getting to our prepared program for you, this is MediaMonarchy.com. My name's James. Here's the news. CFR professor reveals plot for military coup in 2012. This strange, scary, interesting story comes to us by way of FederalJack.com. During the Florida International University Summit, which we'll refer to here as a New World Order Summit. We'll give you the actual name in just a few minutes. During the FIU-NWO summit, a professor at the school named Dr. Mark B. Rosenberg raised the concern during a panel session about the possibility of a military coup taking place in the United States by the year 2012. This was not theorizing. He was simply citing a study that took place at the Army War College with a link to carlisle.army.mil as well as the direct PDF download for you. Dr. Rosenberg explained that this rebellion would be a response to the military being overextended and being put to use by the administration in a manner that is contrary to their official purpose. The invited speaker of the panel, Parag Khanna, P-A-R-A-G-K-H-A-N-N-A, Parag Khanna treated the concern as if it were nonsense and dismissed it by asking the audience, have any of you heard of this? No? Okay, then. It's, of course, interesting to note that both Dr. Rosenberg and Parag Khanna are members of the Council on Foreign Relations, a think tank dedicated to the purpose of establishing a one-world government, proven, documented by Carol Quigley, Bill Clinton's mentor, in his big tome, Tragedy and Hope. Could Dr. Rosenberg's statement exposing the white paper on the coup plot have been an example of dissent within the ranks of the CFR? We could only hope. CFR professor reveals plot for military coup right here in the U.S. in, of course, 2012.
The second question that I'd like to pose relates to the forces driving the emergence of the second world. And have they had an unintentional impact on something that has not been mentioned as well today in any of the discussions, namely civil-military relations in the United States? I'd like to call your attention to an analysis by Charles Dunlap in the U.S. Army War College's academic magazine called Parameters. In this analysis, Mr. Dunlap predicts that there will be a military coup in the United States in the year 2012. In part, because we've asked our military to do too much outside of the traditional national security realm. For Mr. Khanna, has the emergence of the second world been so destabilizing as to lead to admission creep to the extent that it could lead the Army War College to predict, unofficially, of course, that there will be a military coup within the next 3 to 4 years?
Than writing it off or creating a new African sort of great game. Are we going to have a coup in 2012? Why don't I just, is there a show of hands? Are we going to have a coup in 2012? Raise your hand if we are. Okay, so I probably agree with the audience here on that, but I would say that this falls into sort of Rome analogy, this notion that the American society is becoming... Right, okay. Only if led by the War College can there be a coup. But this notion that American society is in decay and decadence, all of the stuff that I overstated in the conclusion of my book, and therefore the military needs to take over. But mission creep is the bigger question. And you know, by now everyone realizes that we are experiencing it, and that there are too many troops conducting too many operations. There's a great article in the current issue of Foreign Affairs that points to the lessons of Somalia, Vietnam, and Lebanon, where the U.S. withdrew, but the situation, they didn't collapse as such. There was no domino effect. Whether it's the Lebanese civil war was ended and brokered by the Arab League, Vietnam and Indochina did sort of rehabilitate, and we somehow neglected that with the invasions of Iraq and Afghanistan, so that we have to ourselves go to this, the Tom Barnett, do your civil service overseas. And I would like to see a lot of us think of it as a national duty. Not only does the United States government, but also American NGOs and corporations all need people who have spent time, lived overseas, speak foreign languages, have connections on the ground, and are comfortable and familiar with the Middle East, Latin America, Central Asia, the Far East, and so forth. And so you will be much more employable if you do go and spend a year or two in Africa. So that when I, in my office, when undergrads or graduate students come by and they say, hey, can I have an internship at the New America Foundation or Brookings, I would say, no, I'd rather you didn't. I'd rather you, I should have a sign on my door that says, don't talk to me unless you want to leave this country the second you graduate school, because I think it's the most important thing that you can do.
The topic kind of gets derailed there. And it gets actually also a little difficult to hear. So, of course, in as in all cases, I implore you to watch the whole clip for yourself. But within there, we have in the second part, Parag Khan speaking and basically brushing off the initial topic and going on to discuss more general topics of national service and foreign policy and quoting and citing other CFR think tank documents. However, the topic at hand was a white paper and an article in a military publication called Parameters. And again, we have the PDF downloads for you about the possibility of a military coup in 2012. However, even when they broach the topic, you're not sure exactly where they stand. They almost seem to come at it from the angle of, well, this would be a good thing. This would be the military sort of reasserting its, I don't know what, against an administration that overextended it and caused, quote-unquote, mission creep. FederalJack.com is where we got this story originally, and they have a lot of information about it. So if you hit up summit.federaljack.com, you can read more about this panel, this conference, this geopolitical summit presented by the Florida International University called America and the Rising Powers, a geopolitical summit. The other big story. Another big story. Pakistan cricket attack. Inside job theory goes viral. This is originally from Steve Watson. This was a story I didn't pay attention to initially. I try and stay on top of everything, but you, of course, always inevitably miss something and come back a few days later and go, what on earth is going on here? Pakistan cricket attack inside job theory goes viral. The mainstream media, both national and international, however much more international, the mainstream media has embraced suggestions of an inside job as evidence continues to mount that Tuesday's attack on the Sri Lankan cricket team was a carefully staged event rather than a hit-and-run strike. Articles in The Independent, The London Times, The Daily Mail, Agency French Press, and The Telegraph, with links to all those for you. All those have articles focused on unanswered questions and suspicious activity regarding the attack, which killed 6 people and 2 civilians and wounded 20-some others.
This was a well-planned, well-orchestrated, and well-equipped attack. The Sri Lankan cricket team was just arriving at the Gaddafi Stadium in Lahore when the gunmen pounced. The police believe there were a team of 12 terrorists. Here you can see 2 of them, AK-47s at the ready, and they're wearing protective flak jackets and carrying hand grenades. The police guarding the cricket convoy were the first targets. Several of them were shot and killed straight away. Then the cricketers themselves came under fire. One journalist nearby described what he saw and heard.
Rather than go to hospital, they drove the bus to the stadium and treated the players immediately in the dressing rooms, which are where they are now. I actually went out through the dressing rooms to have a look and see what's going on when I heard the gunfire. I saw Mendes sitting down holding his head, but he looked to be okay. I think he was just grazed. And then I heard more sort of gunfire, which seemed to be quite close, so we just all ran off. And I told my cameraman to stay in the control room until the commotion died down.
They weren't even meant to be in Pakistan. This was a tour meant for the Indian cricket team, but that was cancelled after the Mumbai terror attacks. This encounter lasted for 30 minutes. 3 of the gunmen are thought to have arrived in a rickshaw. They attacked from 4 sides, indicating a level of coordination. The Punjab authorities were left stunned.
I'm getting the helicopter for the Sri Lankan team, and I'm here to make sure that we surround the area and we capture them. Either we kill them or we capture them.
There had been a threat to the Sri Lankan team, according to police sources, and their route to the Gaddafi Stadium was altered. It made no difference. The attack exacted a devastating toll, and all 12 gunmen managed to escape in the confusion which followed. The cricket tour was immediately cancelled, but far more worrying is the implications on security in this already fragile and increasingly insecure country. Alex Crawford, Sky News, South Asia.
On the line from Modell Town, it's near the stadium in Lahore, is a local resident, Adnan Ali. Adnan, just tell us what you've been seeing there this morning.
Hi, Chris. which what I've been listening to and I've been hearing from my friends, and now the local TV stations have also started reporting that four people have been arrested while running from the Liberty area where the incident took place, and running from there towards Model Town. And the Model Town police have arrested four people, and two of them were armed, and they are pretty young, and that's the news coming out. It has been confirmed now. It has been a chaos. I woke up because my wife called me, and she works right behind in a school, right behind Qaddafi Stadium, and she called me that there are bomb blasts and a lot of firing going on. So I, you know, I was in touch with her, and I started using Twitter and Facebook to talk to people on the network, and that's where all the news started coming in, and I was hoping to help people and just, you know, participate and do something, because it's such a shocking thing to have cricket attack in Pakistan. It's just weird.
Adnan, I'm very grateful for your eyewitness update there from just outside Lahore. Thank you for your time. Just to reiterate today's main breaking news story, a terrorist attack on the Sri Lankan cricket team in Pakistan. At least seven, possibly eight members of the squad have been injured. Five police officers have been killed in the attack.
That's just a little bit of media from Sky News discussing this pack attack. And if we just hit one of those links in the story, and again, the inside job theory, the unanswered questions, the suspicious activity being noted by the Telegraph, the AFP, the Daily Mail, the Times, the Independent. Let's just go to the Times of India. Lahore attack, an inside job. Sri Lankan off-spinner Murali Muralitharan and Australian umpire Simon Taufel suggested on Thursday that there may have been a conspiracy behind the attack. Speculation continued to swirl around the 3-3 attack on Lankan cricketers in Lahore, with Australian umpire Simon Taufel and Lankan spinner Mutiai Muralitharan. Does that mangle that for you? Suggesting an inside job, even as the Pakistani media claimed the attack might have been planned by Lashkar-e-Taiba to take players hostage and demand the yada yada. That's from the Times of India. So I just now hit Google News and just typed in Lahore, city in Pakistan that we're discussing. This from timesonline.co.uk. Gunmen who attacked cricketers in Lahore had links to Al-Qaeda. Pakistan has identified the gunmen who attacked Sri Lanka's cricket team in Lahore and arrested some key suspects, including the brother of the suspected mastermind. We will have to dive more and more into this, as I'm sure we'll discover even more suspicious activity, unanswered questions, and more theories of the Pakistan cricket attack being an inside job. It's on 3-3. Someone sure likes numbers. And I'll just quickly note that, of course, whenever we see large, carefully orchestrated, big terror attacks, they are generally shepherded by intelligence services. Those are the two bigger stories that we wanted to hit right out of the gate on this episode 114 of MediaMonarchy.com. So we had the CFR professors and mockingbirds revealing a plot for a coup by the military in 2012, and then we also have the Pakistan cricket inside job attack. Those are the two big stories. Now, let's set the table with a wider agenda. And what is that agenda? Lou Dobbs and the New World Order.
Good evening, everybody. President Obama and British Prime Minister Gordon today calling for a new world order to tackle our global economic crisis. President Obama said globalization can be an enormous force for good. Prime Minister Brown again pushing for what he calls a global new deal, paid for by the United States, of course. And Budget Director Peter Orszag saying budget deficits could amount to $2 trillion more if Congress doesn't pass the president's budget. Ed Henry reports now from the White House on a summit meeting between President Obama and Prime Minister Brown. A meeting of the U.S. President and British Prime Minister used to mean talk of war and peace, but it's all about the global economic meltdown now.
My main message to the American people is to just recognize that we dug a very deep hole for ourselves. There were a lot of bad decisions that were made. We are cleaning up that mess. It's going to be sort of full of fits and starts in terms of getting the mess cleaned up, but it's going to get cleaned up.
Prime Minister Gordon Brown is wounded at home and wanted a full-fledged news conference to stand beside a popular new leader. Instead, Brown got a more low-key meeting in the Oval Office. And yet, unlike Tony Blair, he didn't seem to mind being considered the American president's poodle.
And I think the history books will record that what he has done in his first nearly 50 days of office has been momentous in setting the means by which we can see the economic recovery happening.
Brown desperately needs President Obama to help Great Britain deal with the financial crisis.
As far as the common interest that we're pursuing, look, there is the possibility in the next few months of a global new deal that will involve all the countries of the world in sorting out and cleaning up the banking system.
The president pointedly did not make any promises about a global new deal, focusing instead on trying to reassure Americans about 12-year lows on Wall Street.
What I'm looking at is not the day-to-day gyrations of the stock market, but the long-term ability for the United States and the entire world economy to regain its footing. And, you know, the stock market is sort of like a tracking pole in politics. You know, it bobs up and down day to day. And if you spend all your time worrying about that, then you're probably going to get the long-term strategy wrong.
Now, even as the president insisted he's not following the markets on a day-to-day basis, he did say that prices are so low right now on Wall Street that it might be a good idea for Americans to go out and buy stocks if they're in it for the long term. White House spokesman Robert Gibbs was quick to stress the president was not issuing any kind of official buy signal. Perhaps, though, he's trying to put a little confidence in those sagging markets. Luke.
I'm not sure what you would call that, but the President of the United States, who has pretty much demonstrated he doesn't know much about economics, suggesting people go out and buy stocks, and the last person who does know something about stocks to make such a suggestion was Warren Buffett in October, and since then the Dow Jones Industrials have lost more than 2,000 points. Surely the President will refrain from doing that sort of thing again, one hopes. But I don't quite understand the President's comment about a tracking poll, a political tracking poll, when talking about the markets. Housing values have just collapsed in this country. The credit markets are absolutely resistant to flowing and to opening up. It is not simply a tracking poll called the stock market that we're looking at here.
A global New Deal. A new financial world order. So that sets the table quite well for what we're sinking into. And again, let's just glance at Google News real quick and note that February payrolls fall 650,000, unemployment at 8.1%. But let's get into the latest on the Obamasiah. Staged politics and the left-right facade. First, a commentary editorial of note from McClatchy, pointing out quite correctly that both parties love big government, just different programs. Again, they'll quibble over, I think we should send troops here, I think we should spread money over there. They don't question the overall agenda. Gangsters. You know, they fight for some turf and maybe have to blast some guys every now and then, but ultimately they will do nothing to turn over the game board, as it were, and call into question the whole phony left-right facade. So we had Gordon Brown, of course, always calling for a new world order. He was here, and he was appealing to the U.S. Congress for help to save the world. That no small task, being noted here from the Telegraph. Gordon Brown has attempted to establish himself as an international statesman with the vision to lead the world out of recession in his speech to the U.S. Congress in Washington. Links in there to his entire speech. Links to historycommons.org to read about Gordon Brown's dirty history. However, we return to the CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Conference. The site and focus of much ballyhoo and much bullshit from the talking heads both on the phony left and the phony right. On the B-side, we noted Ron Paul, of course, being the one guy speaking since at CPAC. So go back and check that out, where he, of course, notes that our foreign policy is exactly what Osama bin Laden said that he wanted before he died. However, another notable quotable, add it to the meme pool, if you will, where the never-confirmed UN ambassador John the Mustache Bolton notes, perhaps nuking Chicago would teach that Obama a lesson.
Imagine a place where an entire ballroom of people cheers when someone makes the repeatedly disproven accusation that the President of the United States is not a citizen of this country he leads. Then they laugh when a former ambassador to the UN suggests that the same president might learn a valuable lesson if Chicago were to be destroyed by a nuclear device. A place where boxes upon boxes of racist Obama Waffles cereal are once again openly, proudly available for sale. That place, in our fifth story on the countdown, is the Omni Shoreham Hotel in Washington, home to your 2009 Conservative Political Action Conference, better known as CPAC. During the 2008 election, Republicans having warned, vote for Obama and you will die. Today, Mr. Bush's UN ambassador, John Bolton, never confirmed, all but saying, because you have voted for Obama, get ready to die. The Mustache warning that the security of the U.S. is now at dire risk under the Obama administration and underscoring his point by cracking a joke about Obama's hometown.
The fact is, on foreign policy, I don't think President Obama thinks it's a priority. He said during the campaign he thought Iran was a tiny threat. Tiny, depending on how many nuclear weapons they're ultimately able to deliver on target. It's tiny compared to the Soviet Union, but is the loss of one American city, pick one at random, Chicago, is that a tiny threat?
In fact, Ambassador, get your facts straight. Mr. Obama called Iran a tiny country and never a tiny threat.
And then the funny thing, of course, is that it's all wrong. Iran is fucking huge. But of course, Obama thinks there's 57 states, so what do you know? So that's left gatekeeper Keith Olbermann talking about John Bolton and those crazy conservatives, and even bringing up Obama birth truth, which we'll discuss briefly in just a moment. But again, planning the meme, we worry sometimes of the cities of note, of possible probable sites of future staged terror. Those being Denver and Chicago and Portland and Houston. But moving on the staged Obama-Sia politics and the phony left-right facade, New World Order crony Gary Hart is calling for civic duty. That's, of course, up on his blog site on Huffington Post. If you need a little reminder, Gary Hart, of course, in the days after 9/11, saying there is a chance that the president could use this disaster to bring about what his father called the New World Order. Much more recently, he, of course, was writing an open letter to Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, the democratically elected president of Iran, fumbling buffoon that he is. He wrote an open letter to Ahmadinejad several months ago saying, hey, guess what? If you don't think the U.S. will stage phony provocations to get into war with you, you better look at your history. So again, that's why we watch and listen and read what these supposed frontmen and elites and mid-level gangsters and banksters and managers what they write and what they say. We stage terror. We've done it before. We'll do it again. Play ball, bitch. Macon.com out of Georgia notes that many Georgia politicos haven't filed federal and state taxes in years. Which brings us to our next story from Fox News. With a slightly altered headline, however, they are at least calling out the hypocrisy. Tax evading Geithner will go after tax evaders. The pot has issued the kettle an ultimatum. Tax dodgers beware. Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner, who was forced to fork up $34,000 in unpaid back taxes, told the House Ways and Means Committee Tuesday that the Obama administration will be going after people who avoid and evade taxes. Tax avoidance. In prepared remarks before Congress, he said the president is intent on, quote, tackling tax shelters and other efforts to abuse our tax laws, including international tax evasion efforts. Geithner himself never used a tax haven to avoid payment, but he did neglect to pay Medicare and Social Security taxes while he was a self-employed staffer for the International Monetary Fund. He even hired an accountant for the 2 years he forgot to file. They don't forget. They know it's bullshit. But you gotta pay your cut to the gangsters for protection or they'll burn your shit down. A quick note on thinkprogress.org, Twitter, Blumenauer, McCain, and Oregon's Solar Highway. However, we're going to move to USA Today for some more theater of the mind controlled. Limbaugh challenges Obama to a duel. Rush Limbaugh, apparently taking to heart the Obama administration's description of him as the leader of the GOP, has invited Obama to come on his radio show for a debate. The edgy, bombastic conservative, describing himself as a harmless, lovable little fuzzball and the last man standing, unwrapped the invitation in a long series of jibes at Obama, his policies, his party, his aides, his speaking style, and the entertaining he's done during his 6 weeks at the White House. You're one of the most gifted public speakers of your age. I would think, Mr. President, you would jump at this opportunity, Limbaugh said on his show, which has millions of listeners on more than 600 radio stations. You can read the whole dual glove slap at a link right there for you, taking you to, of course, rushlimbaugh.com. More WWF phony left-right bullshit. In the last week, of course, swirling around coming out of this CPAC. We heard noted in the Dobbs New World Order clip that, of course, Obama urged Americans to invest in the plummeting stock market. And I believe it's Kurt Nimmo that wrote that, okay, Obama officially thinks you're stupid. But that's neither here nor there. However, if we jump to WSWS.org, Obama announces plan to continue the U.S. military occupation of Iraq. That's a more correct headline to all the much ballyhooed bullshit about getting out of Iraq. We, of course, noted the residual forces, or as we posited, perhaps the stay-behind units. President Obama formally announced his administration's plans for the continued U.S. military occupation of Iraq on Friday, February 27th, in remarks delivered at Camp Lejeune Marine Base in North Carolina. Far from bringing the war to an end, the plans will maintain present troop levels for 1 year and ensure a substantial military presence for at least 3 years through the end of 2011. Court rejects Obama's bid to stop wiretapping suit. That's from 911blogger.com, and that's, of course, noting the battles, the Bush battles that now Obama has picked up and continue to fight for. That would, of course, be retroactive immunity to the telecoms for spying on you and me. And the Associated Press notes in our next piece, Obama, change, but not from Bush. For all the sweeping changes that President Barack Obama has delivered, there also has been an ample helping of more of the same. the Bush policy of imprisoning enemy combatants in Afghanistan without trial, the Obama White House is okay with that. The Bush tax cuts for the rich that candidate Obama promised to wipe out early, President Obama will let them run their course. The Bush team's claim of state secrets privilege to avoid releasing information, the Obama White House has agreed thrice over, even as it reviews the policy. Across the landscape of government, there are plenty of other instances in which Obama is staying his Republican predecessor's course, at least for now. Much back and forth on all of this. Continuity you can believe in. A few more headlines to go down the ugly Bush crime family hole as we are finding out more things. We are getting memos. We are seeing the complete naked destruction of everything we thought that the United States was built on. However, that's the thing that we've noted somewhat recently. The thought, perhaps, that things like the Constitution and the Bill of Rights were never meant for you or I. And so, your creator gives you all those rights as a sentient being. But when you have a bunch of wealthy, land-owning Freemasons, they offer you these rights. That only legitimizes the fact that they granted you those rights, so then later they can take them away and we'll fight about guns and Second Amendment states and da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. But that is an even uglier hole to go down, because I was only just mentioning the ugly Bush hole. Some of the headlines: Bush considered revoking First Amendment, Bush lawyers approved Constitution-free domestic military ops, OLC authorized Pentagon to ignore the Bill of Rights on U.S. soil, CIA destroyed nearly 100 torture tapes, or the Washington Times notes more specifically, they ruined 92 interrogation tapes. So links there, like I said, to the Washington Times, the Washington Post, Blacklisted News, Threat Level, and on and on and on. Politico.com notes the conspiracies, and they seem to have coined a phrase that when I saw it, I wish I would have came up with that. I'm always trying to smash words together and play on words and things like that. It's something I have always enjoyed, thanks to not only my dad, but George Carlin. Words take care of you. The word, the phrase Politico has coined in their new conflation of 9/11 truth with Obama birthers. Bill Clinton had the Vince Foster murder. George W. Bush had 9/11 truth. And the new administration has brought with it a new culture of conspiracy, the birthers. Out of the gaze of the mainstream and even the conservative media is a flourishing culture of advocates, theorists, and lawyers all devoted to proving that Barack Obama isn't eligible to be the president of the United States. As I have noted many, many times, this is a compelling and interesting and unprecedented situation. And I'm glad people like Alan Keyes and Phil Berg of ObamaCrimes.com are investigating the Obama citizenship question. However, I have said for many, many, many weeks now that perhaps Obama birther truth is just like the controlled demolition angle of 9/11. It's the big, interesting thing that gets everyone's attention, and that's where all the conspiracy focuses on, and that's where the mainstream media will poke fun at. However, there are other, far more important angles. Because if they can get you to ask the wrong questions, they don't give a fuck what the answer is. And again, if it comes out that Obama isn't actually a citizen, we will rush headlong into changing the Constitution over the weekend. Of course, thereby opening the door to people like Nazi Schwarzenegger and his death's head skull belt buckle that he keeps wearing around all over the world. Man held after mailing HIV-tainted blood to Obama. This unfortunate story is from CNN, and we keep track of all the bizarre threats to Obama. However, from Russ Kick and TheMemoryHole.org, asking the interesting question, Obama and Biden, microchipped or wearing tracking devices? While profiling White House Chief of Staff and dual Israeli citizen Rahm Israel Emanuel, while profiling him for The New Yorker, Ryan Liza saw something interesting in Emanuel's office. It's mentioned only in passing. Quote, next to his computer monitor is a smaller screen that looks like a handheld GPS device and tells Emanuel where the president and senior White House officials are at all times. So, Obama, Biden, and other senior White House officials are low-jacked? It makes sense that they'd be wearing, carrying something, or is it, as seems likely, even an injected RFID chip? So it makes sense that they'd be wearing or carrying something that always gives their location in case of kidnapping, medical emergency, etc. But here's the kicker. The device is obviously giving off a signal, which is how it can be tracked, and that signal could theoretically be intercepted by unauthorized parties, and it could probably be blocked, faked, etc. One of the main objections to Obama keeping his crackberry is that the signal could be used to track him. Now that he's keeping it, he's trackable in two ways. Undoubtedly, strong measures have been taken to prevent his trackability via the BlackBerry or the monitoring device, but in the case of the latter, it's supposed to monitor his movements. Its whole purpose is to let certain people know where he is at any given moment. Thus, the signal can't be completely blocked out because then it would be useless. More questions. Who, besides Emanuel, is authorized to have the receiver showing the real-time location of the country's leaders? How many receivers are there? You know that this very well could be very real. It's 2009, people. It's the 21st century. Even the shit they're showing us in television, you know that they've been doing for a long time. When they announce things to you, it just means that they're ready to tell you about it. They've already run all the R&D way in advance. So, it's quite possible and an interesting question and has probably been or will soon feature on an episode of 24. Or wasn't there the previous James Bond movie where he gets injected with an RFID tracking chip that saves his life? One from Danger Room, Shadow Games behind Obama's missile deal. That, of course, brings up the whole thing about this missile defense system. And now, supposedly, a secret letter written to Medvedev, president of Russia. And all the little behind-the-scenes wheeling and dealing that seems to be going on. Again, many times, the actors and puppets put on stage to dance around and have a big show for us is not what's really going on. It's theater. Think of all the things and the people dressed in black running around behind the set. Perhaps even under your seats and under the risers and up in the grid. And however, another one from Danger Room. Obama versus Pentagon bureaucracy. Round one of a fake fight. Everybody in D.C. knows that the way the federal government and the Pentagon especially handles contracts is beyond screwed up. Sweetheart deals, busted budgets, and lax oversight and missed deadlines are pretty much the norm on every major deal. On March 4th, President Barack Obama sent a message to the federal paper pushers. The days of contract shenanigans are over. But can anything, even a direct order from the Oval Office, change one of the planet's most dysfunctional bureaucracies? Obama signed a memorandum with a link for you to whitehouse.gov that gives the Office of Management and Budget until July 1st to issue new guidelines for identifying government contracts, wasteful, inefficient, or not otherwise likely to meet the agency's needs and to formulate appropriate corrective action in a timely manner, quote unquote. This move would give agencies the potential authority to cancel contracts outright if deemed necessary. Interpreted liberally, this could include most of the big weapons development deals that the Pentagon has on the books today. It's part of a larger push to rein in government spending. In a speech, Obama said, government contracting practices need to be overhauled to cut back on waste, fraud, and abuse. Quote, over the last 8 years, government spending on contracts has doubled to over $500 billion. Far too often, the spending is plagued by massive cost overruns, outright fraud, and the absence of oversight and accountability. We might get into more of this as the episode goes on, but of course, definitely as time marches on, we're seeing much different and similar in a way to the things that we saw under the Emergency Patriot Act kind of Homeland Security Administration rerouting and rerouting of all these bureaucracies. We're now seeing much more of the military, the bomb squad being folded into the Pentagon getting in bed with NASA, NASA getting into bed with Obama. And so they're talking about cutting spending, but when you actually look at the fine print, what they're really talking about is taking these things out of the special sort of emergency budgets for things that we don't typically plan for, and just rolling it and making it part of the regular budget. The last note on this post of the Obamasiah, staged politics, and the left-right facade is, of course, another note and another reminder coming very soon to DVD and the web virally worldwide. This one is probably going to make quite a stink. The new documentary, of course, from Alex Jones, The Obama Deception. It comes out March 15th. However, of course, it's time to look at the new financial world order, the coming global New Deal. And again, glancing at the breaking news, as we note and renote and remind that U.S. unemployment has reached a 26-year high. But on this econo crash note, homes, fronts, bank riots, and a global currency. First, a headline from Yahoo, by way of Christian Science Monitor, brought to my attention by my man Clyde Lewis of the Ground Zero Lounge. An ugly bias is back, and that's blaming Jews for financial woes. As Clyde noted in the Ground Zero Lounge episode Blood Cement, about seeing a resurgence in the supposed attacks against Jews. Or attacks against supposed Jews, or supposed attacks against the supposed money masters. 1 in 8 U.S. homeowners late paying or in foreclosure. This from Reuters. About 1 in 8 U.S. homeowners with mortgages. Remember, break that word down. We discovered and discussed recently mortgages. That means you will pay until you die. That's what mort is. Mort, death. Gage, wage, money, mortgage, death money. Money till you die. About 1 in 8 U.S. homeowners with mortgages, a record share, ended 2008 behind on their loan payments or in the foreclosure process as job losses intensified, a housing crisis spawned by lax lending practices, the Mortgage Bankers Association said on Thursday. MBAA.org, link for you to their press release. With unemployment at a 16.5-year high, or is it now a 26-year high, and expected to continue rising until mid to late 2010, more borrowers will pay late or fall into foreclosure this year. Quote from MBAA, while California, Florida, Nevada, Arizona, and Michigan continue to dominate the delinquency numbers, some of the sharpest increases we saw last quarter in loans 90 days or more delinquent were in Louisiana, New York, Georgia, Texas, and Mississippi. Signs of the spreading impact in the recession. 1 in 8 U.S. homeowners late or in foreclosure. Two takes on one story First from Wikinews, thousands protest across the U.S. against the government's financial policies, or, as noted from Raw Story, bloggers charge that the Tea Party anti-stimulus protests are a corporate front. That gets into the bigger story of Santelli and CNBC and yada yada staged theatrical bullshit that doesn't get at the heart of the matter. However, anytime there are staged protests, we are always interested. From Daily Express, that's express.co.uk, MI5 alert on bank riots. Top secret contingency plans have been drawn up to counter the threat posed by a summer of discontent in Britain. We, of course, noted last week. It's also called the Summer of Rage. Coming soon to 2009. The double whammy of the worst economic crisis in living memory and a motley crew of political extremists determined to stir up civil disorder has led to the extraordinary step of the army being put on standby. MI5 and Special Branch are targeting activists they fear could inflame anger over job losses and payouts to failed bankers. One of the most notorious anarchist websites, Class War, asks how to keep warm during the credit crunch? Burn a banker. LondonClassWar.org. Such remarks have rung alarm bells in Scotland Yard and the Ministry of Defense. Intel sources said the police, backed by MI5, are determined to stay on top of a situation that could spiral out of control as the recession bites deep. The chilling prospect of soldiers being drafted onto the streets has not been discounted, although it is regarded as a last resort. Secret reports of the MI5, British intelligence, planning for bank riots this summer of discontent and rage caused by anarchists. We've seen this before. We'll see it again. Yes, there are peaceful protesters, civil disobedience, non-violent civil disobedience. However, in the cases of many protests, however, now with the aid of the internet, we've been exposing many of them. Funded and trained provocateurs cause violence, thereby letting the police crack down on the real legitimate peaceful protesters. And of course, showing the videos all around the world of trained thugs from Oregon smashing windows in Seattle. Staged agent provocateur bullshit. Yes, there are real people. Yes, real violence happened. However, the fuse is lit by intelligence services embedding themselves, invading inside, infiltrating groups. So whether you call it COINTELPRO, whether you call it espionage, or just going undercover, cops dress up like anarchists and break shit. It reminds me, sometimes, you know, you'll see postings or articles of, oh, the Nazis are coming into town. Oh, yeah, let's go yell at the Nazis. Don't fall in to that. Most of that shit, again, is provocateured and infiltrated and in many cases run by the feds. Neo-Nazis, hate groups, just Google and put words plus words together, like, you know, the FBI running the KKK in Florida. Most of the hate, most of the violence, most of the bullshit that has gone on in our world has actually diminished to a great degree. However, the superclass, the elites, the powers that be need the fights to keep going. They need you and I to keep fighting with each other. So that's why they have to provocateur terror, and that's why they have to provocateur hate speech, and that's why you'll see, you know, kids from the ADL, oh, they're the ones who actually drew the swastika on their door. So whatever you want to call it, it's all ultimately false flag terror. It's all ultimately a psychological operation on you and me. So, after that little rant, we're just about into hour number two of episode 114 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's March 6, 2009. My name is James Evan Pilato. I am the host and the webmaster and the single obsessed person behind MediaMonarchy.com, coming to you live from the Portland Radio Authority and the Revere Radio Network. Continuing. We'll hit a funny one, and then we'll hit a disturbing one. But yet, the latter being not all that surprising. The funny one from the Washington Post. Frustrated building owner lets a sex shop open in Old Town Alexandria. Basically, the story here, and there, of course, lots of turns and twists in the story, but ultimately, a building owner and a business owner in Old Town Alexandria in Virginia had been working with the historical committee and the town planners on how he could build an addition and kind of remodel his historical building and be within the guidelines for Old Town Alexandria. He worked with him very closely. There was some back and forth. They collaborated, and he thought he had an agreement. They backed out at the last minute. He had nothing. His business went out, and he was going to sell the building. So, he basically let a sex shop move in, and it's doing booming business, and he is happy. However, some may turn their nose and cluck their tongues and say, what's to be done about this sex shop? But turnabout is fair play, and it's funny to show the hypocrisy into the bastards' faces that don't want it, of course, in their backyard. And, of course, also the whole other idea that sex is dirty and nasty and you're icky for even thinking about it or wanting to do it. There's nothing they can do about it. But they'll, of course, try and figure out a way to change the zoning laws to see if they can get rid of this evil sex shop that a frustrated building owner let open in Old Town Alexandria. Now, from Paul Joseph Watson, and again returning to CNBC, and again, the coming global New Deal, the new financial world order, CNBC analyst notes that a global bank and a global currency will be here within 15 years. Head of market analysis for Schneider Foreign Exchange, that's SchneiderFX.com, Stephen Gallo told CNBC on February 25th that the financial crisis will lead to the creation of a global central bank and a global single currency within 15 years, which of course echoes the call of most top globalists who have exploited the problems they created to push for a new financial world order. Highlighting the significance of the introduction of the euro, Gallo said that the single currency was, quote, where we are headed globally on a monetary basis over the course of the next 10 to 15 years, end quote. As we have highlighted before, the elite have exploited the problem that they created to push for increased centralization and regulation of the world economic system in pursuit of de facto global financial dictatorship.
The head of market analysis from Schneider Foreign Exchange, he'll be with us for the full hour. Also, Charlie Morris, head of Absolute Return from HSBC Global Asset Management, is with us. Get your email questions in if you have any for the gentleman. It's worldwide@cnbc.com. That's the address, worldwide@cnbc.com. Stephen, you came into the studio and you said, I love the euro. Everybody hates the euro, but I love it.
Yeah.
Explain.
I think as far as monetary events go, certainly the advent of the single currency is probably the most important and most significant, and I think also most telling in terms of where I think we're headed globally on a monetary basis over the course of the next 10 to 15 years. Clearly, one of the things that brought us into this crisis was an overexpansion of the money supply on a global basis, and I think that over the course of the next couple of decades, central banks are going to need to pay more attention attention to what's going on with the global money supply rather than the money supply just in their own borders. And that might call into question the need for some kind of a global central bank where or a global central bank that's united by central banks for bigger monetary areas underneath that global central bank. So, yeah, I think that the euro is certainly forward-looking. I don't buy into what these Euroskeptics say. That's my basic view.
And is that regardless of views on Eastern European markets at the moment and Eastern European banks?
It is. I mean, over the longer term. I mean, there's no question about it. The euro is getting hit now because of the Central and Eastern European problems. Clearly, in the short term, euro weakness is probably one of the trends that will stay with us for a little while, depending how long it takes for the dollar to pull back, because I think that's coming as well. Irregardless of the challenges that are facing the single currency over the short term, I think the euro is here to stay. And I think without the euro, we would be faced with a number of severe crises scattered throughout Europe right now with some key European nations.
Global banks, global currency, coming soon to a world near you. That's Stephen Gallo of Schneider Foreign Exchange, adding himself to the list of those calling for a new financial world order. Two links to hit within that post, within just that story. One from Newsweek. This is only going back to November. Jeffrey E. Garten writing for Newsweek, "We need a bank of the world. The financial crisis is global, and only an international central bank can deal with it." The other article takes us back to 2004 from David R. Francis, writing for the Christian Science Monitor, asking the question, "Are you ready for a global currency?" If you do even just the smallest bit of money history research just in America alone, you would see that all these central banks and the Federal Reserves, they were all supposed to be set up to prevent the very problems that are going on right now. But again, it's problem, reaction, solution. They cause the problem to engineer the reaction from you that they need to pass the agenda they otherwise wouldn't have been able to do because they didn't have you begging for, "Please bail me out. Please make me safer from terrorists or gangs or whatever." Another one from Paul Joseph Watson, another one on the Econo crash level, another one from Gerald Salente of Trends Research. And of course, he noted that it was coming, and now he's just saying, we're there, and the U.S. has entered the greatest depression. Trends Research analyst Gerald Salente, who has risen in prominence on the back of his deadly accurate economic predictions, says that the collapse of the financial markets heralds the start of the greatest depression. In his latest Trend Alert Bulletin, Gerald Salente attacks mainstream pundits who falsely predicted a market bottom at the start of a new recovery, noting that conventional analysts have been proven dead wrong again and again, and that there will be no turnaround in the second quarter of 2009, or 2010, or 2011. The global financial system, built on endless supplies of cheap money, rampant speculation, fraud, greed, and delusion, is terminally ill and will not be coaxed into remission by stimulus packages, nor restored to health by government buyouts and bailouts. The most positive prediction Gerald Salente makes is that the Dow will not reach zero, a tongue-in-cheek reaction to the recent record plunge, which saw the Dow roll back to 1997 levels, well below 7,000. Salente warns that the first signs of real panic are starting to set in, unrest that will cause governments to, quote, take draconian measures to prevent total economic collapse and public panic. Expect massive bank failures, runs on banks, and bank holidays, even if deposits are FDIC insured. Quick access to money is by no means assured. At minimum, have reserves on hand for emergencies. Salente cites gold as one of the few investments that will continue to rise in value, eventually reaching $2,000 an ounce and beyond. Silente's dire forecasts were initially scoffed at by the media, but as the crisis has worsened, his credibility has soared. Silente, who successfully predicted the 1997 Asian currency crisis, the subprime mortgage collapse, and the massive devaluation of the U.S. dollar, told the UPI in November 2007 that the following year would be known as the Panic of 2008, adding that, quote, giants would tumble to their deaths, which is exactly what we witnessed with the collapse of Lehman Brothers, Bear Stearns, and others. Of course, the flashbacks to some of the other mentions and dire predictions from Gerald Silente. Of course, that we're going to see the greatest depression ever. That's from way back in February. And, of course, Futurist Foresees Rough Times. That's from January 2008. Again, the link to the UPI article from November of 2007, noting, predicting correctly, the panic of 2008. The one thing I'll throw in, of course, about gold is, if you think about it, 9 times out of 10, what are you going to use that gold for? Food. Food world order. But on to the next post. On and down. And digging. Church, change, bombers, bunkers, and a banana republic 2012. First, a headline. We've covered his dire predictions several times. So just the headline for you now. This one going to Cryptogon.com. Russian scholar says the U.S. will be under martial law in 2009. This, of course, is more dire predictions from the Russian professor known as, I believe, Igor Panarin. P-A-N-A-R-I-N. Whether this will happen, whether this won't, we're all predicting and wondering and fear-mongering martial law, martial law, martial law. It is interesting to note from Cryptogon on this article, Russian scholar says U.S. will be under martial law in 2009. Cryptogon notes, I was going to ignore this like I did the last time it came up, but the emails are already rolling in. I just don't think that it's going to go down this way. Why? Because Americans are like mushrooms. In general, they like being kept in the dark and fed bullshit. They're absolutely content to bathe in official PSYOP and .gov will give them what they want. As long as someone else is willing to buy U.S. treasuries in ever larger amounts, the vast, dumb horror show will play on. That's the thing to focus on. Continuing. My guess is that the next major false flag event will occur at some point after U.S. Treasury auctions begin to fail and the Fed starts buying the paper. It's game over at that point, so why not light off a nuke? It would be like hitting a reset switch. It would induce total and instant amnesia in the small neural swellings between the ears of the zombie sheep. A catalyzing event that calls on all states to create a new world order or some similar nonsense. There can be camps, 2 minutes hate, re-education, etc. I don't see any of the breakup of the U.S. into 6 autonomous regions and a global nuclear war would engulf the Earth before Alaska returns to Russian control. How's it going to go down? That's the question. But another note from Russia, as we jump from Igor Panarin noting martial law 2009, we have from Xinhua, as well as links to MSNBC, the CBC, AFP, and HistoryCommons.org. Canada says Russian bomber intercepted near its airspace. Canadian fighter jets intercepted a Russian bomber near its airspace in the Arctic 3 days before Barack Obama visited Ottawa. Defense Minister Peter McKay said the bomber never entered Canadian airspace. Canadian pilots sent a strong signal they should back off and stay out of our airspace, McKay said at a press conference with the chief of the defense staff and the commander of the North American Aerospace Defense Command. You know them better as NORAD, the guys who failed you on 9/11. Canada says Russian bomber intercepted near its airspace. Question, are there detention facilities in the Arizona desert? There's a link to photos and questions for you to ponder. However, if we jump to the AFP, Mexican President Felipe Calderon links the U.S. to the Mexico drug trade. Calderon hit back in an interview at charges his government is failing in its war against drug cartels, saying corruption in the United States is also to blame. With murders among feuding Mexican drug cartels on the rise and demand for coke and other drugs north of the border, Calderon said the United States should take a hard look at itself before pointing the finger at anyone else. Quote, "The main cause of the problems associated with organized crime is having the world's biggest consumer next to us. Drug trafficking in the United States is fueled by the phenomenon of corruption on the part of the American authorities." He then, of course, called on Barack Annaughton to step up the fight against drugs in his own country. Calderon admitted some Mexican officials had helped cartels, but urged the U.S. to consider how many of its officials have been implicated. Is this another case of just political showboating and WWF? Or is someone like Calderon literally throwing the game board over, saying, the drug war is bullshit, you run the drugs? Pennsylvania Representative Sam Rohrer, R-O-H-R-E-R, from the 128th District in Pennsylvania, introduced a 10th Amendment resolution. You can watch that video from his own YouTube channel. However, on a different note, an Arkansas panel has rejected that state's sovereignty resolution. That's from today's THV.com. Again, out of Arkansas. Again, as we've noted, states rediscovering the 10th Amendment. Another one, more and more. It's always a good distillation. And I think that's why I like stuff from folks like Paul Joseph Watson and Kurt Nemo and Cryptogon and some of the others. Church document encourages congregation to obey the government. A shocking document has come to light from a church in Ohio, which educates its congregation that Barack Annaughton's presidency is appointed by God and that Obama himself is God's minister. In, of course, another perversion of Romans 13, the Bible verse cited as an excuse for Christians not to oppose tyranny. Ohio District Superintendent Reverend John Wooten was responsible for distributing the pamphlet, which was handed out to the Assembly God Church in Ohio, according to a reader who forwarded the document to Paul Joseph Watson and the InfoWars team. You can download the PDF, you can see the pamphlet. And the guy who sent it notes, "This was handed out at the Assembly of God Church that my fiancé and I used to attend. We immediately stopped attending after getting this flyer about submitting to Obama and the government. The pastor even brought children to the front of the church, encouraging them to submit to teachers, firemen, and the police. It was insane." Links in there to dailypaul.com and, of course, to download the PDF of the church document encouraging a congregation to obey the government. The flashback, the perspective, the context for this is jumping back to August of 2007, clergy response teams to quell unrest. FEMA indoctrinating, infiltrating many, many, many churches across the country. Tens of thousands of preachers are now on board with FEMA. Clergy response teams. Basically, when the shit hits the fan and the feds say go to the Superdome, the church is going to say, go ahead, onward, Christian soldier. Oh, good, everything's going to hell. That just means Jesus is coming back. I grew up with that in Southern Baptist Church for many, many years. Thinking about the rapture. and as a little kid, becoming a born-again Christian, where, of course, you say the magic phrases, not exactly a script, but the idea is that you ask Jesus to come into your heart, forgive your sins, and for you to become a Christian. That's basically all it is. But even as a little kid, I would wake up at night and go, "Whoa, what if I did it wrong? Did I say the magic words right?" The rapture and the idea of the rapture has not been around for very long. It is a phony idea that has infiltrated the church that tells believers, not getting into even that whole subject here and now, that you're going to get whisked out of here before everything gets bad. So don't give a shit if everything gets bad and you don't have to fight tyranny, because it's God's plan and it's God's will. Go back to bed, America. Atlanta school lockdown after gun found, two arrested. This was yesterday's story, and it reminds me that we are now, of course, entering the prime area for school shootings. Atlanta school was locked down after a gun was found, two arrested. However, again, from Paul Joseph Watson, military may patrol the bar zone in a Canadian city. Authorities in Barrie, Ontario, are considering a proposal to allow troops to patrol bar areas on weekends in a supposed attempt to prevent rowdiness. Another example of the militarization of law enforcement and the public being conditioned to accept it. City police and Camp Borden officers are discussing using joint street patrols to help keep the peace in Barrie's busy entertainment district on peak weekends, reports the Toronto Star, thestar.com, as part of a move to, quote, cement the base's partnership with Barrie Police. That's, of course, police and military merging into one enforcement unit. Teaming up with military police to patrol the bar zone is a concept we wouldn't have any real problems with, Barrie Police Chief Wayne Frechette said in an interview. It goes on to, of course, note that there really aren't many problems in the city of Barrie near the bars. So why are they doing this? Again, notes on the terror memos that are leaking out. Terror memos reveal pretty much a total fucking destruction of constitutional freedoms. But one disturbing one from Paul Craig Roberts, a long article. I'll just give you the quick, long and short, beginning and end gist of it. Change for the worst. A banana republic by 2012. Obama's presented the most irresponsible budget in U.S. history. His fiscal year 2010 budget projects federal spending of $3.5 trillion and a federal deficit of $1.7 trillion. In other words, 50% of the government's budget consists of red ink. The U.S. might not even make it to 2012 before it's a banana republic. A quick note now, because I didn't feel like getting into it on the website, so I just posted up the links. And what I noted at the end of the B-side of 113 just a little bit ago, Ron Paul does good things. Glenn Beck even sometimes says good things. But are they really on our team? Are they telling you what you want to hear? Are they speaking the language of the patriot community, of the alternative news movement? Are they fake? Are they phonies? This has all reached ridiculous proportions now with this ongoing Glenn Beck psyop. So we've been covering for weeks and weeks, and I've been asking the question, and I think I probably maybe have figured out the answer. It's probably a little bit of both. Has Glenn Beck wigged out and now realized that the shit is real and the shit is going down and he's trying to tell people about it? Or is he a phony shill talking this up to get you angry and to get us scared and to get us in that place where we're operating out of fear and not out of love? And when you're making decisions out of fear and out of anger and without all the info, your decisions are flawed. So just running down the headline list, Glenn Beck mentions FEMA camps on Fox, then Glenn Beck backs off the FEMA camp report with the help of Ron Paul. Alex Jones's latest audio blog discusses Glenn Beck, FEMA, and the forthcoming Obama deception. An article from Lee Rogers on RogueGovernment.com notes that Ron Paul helps Glenn Beck debunk the whole FEMA camp idea. Steve Watson wrote an article saying, yes, Glenn, there is a detention camp. And finally, a video and an article about Stephen Colbert mocking Crazy Eyes Beck with his own Doom Bunker segment. Normalizing all this, and of course, telling you that you're a complete kook if you're prepared for things to go down. There's still so much. We're going to have to hurry. Police State International, Cyber Wars, Databasing, GPS, and you. First, NSA aims to expand its power and take over cybersecurity. That's from Raw Story. And again, we note the blanketing and the bundling and the getting into bed with the intelligence, military, Obama, NASA administration. New Zealand has plugged into the secret Pentagon intranet. As Cryptagon notes, the U.S., Australia, Canada, and Britain and New Zealand always at play. And is it any time a coincidence that these are also the states that are a part of Echelon or the UK-USA security agreement? But by way of the Dominion Post out of New Zealand, a leaked American study into military actions in Afghanistan reveals New Zealand is now plugged into the world's most secret intranet, allowing access to the Pentagon's battle plans. Secret Internet Protocol Router Network, or SpireNet, or SipperNet, rather, is a sophisticated alternative to the internet, allowing New Zealand frigate control rooms and armored vehicles access to material seen on generals' desks in Washington. Defense Minister Wayne Mapp refused to comment on the leak. We don't discuss security matters, he said through a spokesman. You can download that study thanks to WikiLeaks.org and the RAND Corporation. And again, many links for you to read about SipperNet and Echelon and all of the Puzzle Palace. Again, another note from Cryptagon, another good leak and PDF supply from WikiLeaks as they cracked into NATO's master narrative for Afghanistan. With a link for you to download, NATO-master-narrative-2008.pdf. It appears that WikiLeaks is distributing NATO classified documents that some imbecile at CENTCOM left on an open web share. The WikiLeaks people ran a dictionary attack on the files and found that the password was progress. Enemy combatant in the U.S. was indicted. That's from the Washington Times. Again, Obama is fully on board with the war of terror. But a great article from James Corbett at CorbettReport.com announcing the DNA control grid. Recent weeks have seen a string of revelations in mainstream publications that there are plans for a North American Union, a world government, and a New World Order, including a world central bank with the power to knock heads if nations refuse to surrender their authority to an elite group of international banksters, exactly as we've all predicted. Add to these startling admissions the Austin American Statesman's recent discovery of the state of Texas's practice of keeping blood collected at birth for scientific research purposes without the knowledge or consent of parents. The topic of DNA collection by the government usually focuses on criminal databases. The infamous UK DNA database is, in fact, just one of many such national databases justified by their use in helping law enforcement solve cases by recourse to genetic forensics. Of course, the real problem isn't that databases of this sort fail to acknowledge the widespread, systemic, and ultimately inevitable abuses of these law enforcement tools. The problem is that these arguments miss the point entirely by arguing only the limited benefits and drawbacks of DNA databases for law enforcement. Databasing. DNA. There's a video, but we're not going to play the clip. There's another video, and we're not going to play that clip either, but both note complete flagrant police brutality. Video shows teen beaten in Seattle jail. That's from Washington Times with the video clip from CBS. And an elevator video proves that the man did not assault Florida cops. That's from thesunsentinel.com. I believe we're going to have very soon an interview with my man Spencer Thayer of ChicagoCopWatch.org, and we're going to discuss not only his work in Chicago, but just the overarching police state and police brutality that is compacting around us every day. But more on tracking and tracing. This from East Bay Business Times. Test to track traffic using GPS phones. Researchers at UC Berkeley will join in a field test, or rather did join in a field test, on the 8th of February to study how traffic flow can be monitored using data from drivers' GPS-enabled cell phones, with a PDF for you to download the report. The researchers will look at the potential of using cell phone data instead of the road sensors currently used, while at the same time preserving phone users' privacy. The experiment, dubbed Mobile Century, will involve a fleet of 100 cars with drivers carrying Nokia cell phones. They will travel a loop along a 10-mile stretch of Interstate 880 between Hayward and Fremont. The experiment is a joint project between researchers at UC Berkeley's California Center for Innovative Transportation and the Nokia Research Center in Palo Alto, California. Let's track your cars using GPS.
Well, you may not notice, but just about any cell phone, yours included, can be pinpointed, even if you never make a call. Technology correspondent Daniel Sieber takes us beyond the headlines.
Consider your cell phone your own personal tracking device, like it or not.
The cell phone network is tracking you whenever your phone is on. Whether there's a human being receiving some data saying where your phone is, you have no idea, because the phone company has that data and it's what they're doing with it afterwards.
Authorities must have a court's permission to track anyone through cell phone locations, but once that access is granted, it's nearly foolproof.
So how exactly does it work? Well, here's the easiest way to think of cell phone tracking. In order to make or receive a call on your cell phone, your wireless provider has to know where you are. You see this flashing little light up here? You can think of that as your personal locator beacon. In a sense, it's communicating with the cell towers that are all around you all the time as you move around. And they can find you a few different ways.
Well, the cell phone always has to know what cell it's in. Otherwise, it can't send phone calls. Your average phone, when it's walking around, is in view of two or three different cells. And what the phone company can do, and this is very easy, is to compare relative signal strengths and figure out where the phone is, probably to a couple of hundred feet. They triangulate from the radio signal. The third thing is a satellite positioning system, and phones that are equipped with that system can be pinpointed within a few feet.
It's that ability to be so exact that's made it such an invaluable tool for law enforcement. Following last year's failed suicide bombings in London, British investigators used cell phone tracking to find a suspect who'd fled to Italy.
Simpson, the passenger in the car, has a gun at his head.
It was used to track O.J. Simpson's car phone while he was avoiding police along the L.A. freeways. And it was even used as far back as 1993 when police shot and killed drug lord Pablo Escobar in Colombia. But as productive as cell phone tracking can be, privacy advocates are concerned about how all this data is accessed.
I think there's a substantial worry that location information about cell phone users is being released without court order. This is actually an open legal controversy.
If you don't like the idea of being tracked with your cell phone, well, you really only have a few choices. If you use Verizon or Sprint phones, in some cases you can set the GPS chip so it only works when you use 911. If you use Singular or T-Mobile, you're out of luck because they use a triangulation system. Or you could just turn your phone off. Daniel Sieberg, CNN, Atlanta.
And there you have it. One last note on this Police State International posting Cyber Wars databasing GPS and you. Of course, Robert Gates says that the U.S. military can help Mexico in the drug war. However, a brutal posting, MilTech and more, ZFCS, Global TV, BattleBots, and NASA billions. We first note from Threat Level, which very finely covered the Pirate Bay trial in Sweden. The trial is over. The verdict is expected April 17th, and we'll keep an eye out for that. However, first of many from Threat Level and Danger Room, both, Blackwater's Prince cuts and runs. The rebranding of Blackwater continues. First, the mercenary firm expands beyond its core Guns for Hire biz, Link. Then the company changes its name to the inscrutable, barely pronounceable Z, that's X-E, Link. The latest, outspoken and controversial firm founder Eric Prince announces he's stepping down as CEO. I'm a little worn out by the whole thing, the politics of it all. Me not being part of the equation reduces the X on the thing. They bob and weave, they change their names, but we will always follow them and call them out. A strange one from Threat Level. Sting supports 9/11 truther and Pentagon hacker Gary McKinnon and condemns the U.S. However, Diebold, as if we need to find out more things about them, their system has a delete button for erasing audit logs. After 3 months of investigation, California's Secretary of State has released a report examining why a voting system made by Premier Election Solutions, formerly known as Diebold, lost about 200 ballots in Humboldt County during November's presidential election. But the most startling information in the state's 13-page report, with a link to download the PDF, is not why the system lost votes, which Wired.com previously covered in detail, but that some versions of Diebold's vote tabulation system, known as the Global Election Management System, GEMS, include a button that allows somebody to delete audit logs from the system. Auditing logs are required under the Federal Voting System Guidelines, which are used to test and qualify voting systems for use in elections. The logs record changes and other events that occur on voting systems, or rather, it records changes and other events. Long and short of it is, you shouldn't be deleting the logs, and it's illegal and fraudulent. More on the coming global television channel for our global der leader. More from accuracyinmedia.org. However, let's jump to Finland. Let's jump to YLE.fi with an English version, an English translation. Finland's parliament passes Lex Nokia bill. Hey, there's Nokia again. Parliament has passed the controversial reforms to the data protection law, the so-called Lex Nokia bill, with a link for you. The vote was 96 for, 56 against. The hotly debated reforms caused arguments within the government coalition, but also caused a crack in the Green League. A crack in the Green League. Notably, three Green MPs who had previously voted against the bill abstained from the vote. The three folks with Finnish names I will not mangle for you here, however, they are linked up to their own websites for you. They were just three of the 47 parliamentarians who decided not to cast a vote. The bill, dubbed Lex Nokia because of the mobile phone's giant's perceived advocacy for the law, angered unions and privacy rights advocates. So you have their Nokia pushing GPS tracking, whether it's at a study at UC Berkeley or in Finland. More battle bots, more adorable killer robots. One by way of Danger Room, Britain plots battle bots, and there's a little short minute-long video for you to watch that. However, another one, and another mention of the coming yet troubled yet disturbing future combat systems. That's FCS. Army pitches future killers as job savers. In late January, the Air Force's defense contractor buddies started pushing their pet project, the Raptor stealth fighter jet, as a jobs program. Without it, more than 95,000 jobs are at risk, proclaimed one online ad. The New America Foundation figures the real number is more like 35,000, but you get the idea. With a link for you. But at least the Air Force had the good sense to step back and let its industrial partners make the case for their weapons as stimulus. The Army wasn't so slick, alas. The Army is trying hard to keep future combat systems, its massive effort to make the force lighter, more lethal, and better networked, away from the budget axe. During the presidential campaign, both Obama-Kane talked about slowing down or killing future combat systems. Despite some successes, FCS has become a poster child in Washington for Pentagon bloat and overreach. Many, many links in there for you to go down the hole and learn more about future combat systems and coming killer robots, which we'll hear more about in just a moment. One headline from Daily Mail, the headset that will mimic all five senses. However, more crazy conspiracy theorists coming out of Russia. We're going to have to do something about them. This by way of RIA Novosti, Russian general says the U.S. may have planned the recent satellite collision. A collision between U.S. and Russian satellites in early February may have been a test of new U.S. tech to intercept and destroy satellites rather than an accident, a Russian military expert has said. According to official reports, one of 66 satellites owned by Iridium, a U.S. telecoms company, and the Russian Cosmos 2251 satellite launched in 93 and believed to have been defunct, collided on February 10th about 800 kilometers, that's 500 miles, kids, above Siberia. However, Major General retired Leonid Shershnev, S-H-E-R-S-H-N-E-V, former head of Russia's military space intelligence, said in an interview published by the Moskovsky Komsomolets newspaper, and I could not find a translation for you, however, we link to the newspaper untranslated. Shershnev said that the U.S. satellite involved in the collision was used by the U.S. as part of the dual-purpose Orbital Express research project. He claims the U.S. military decided to continue with the project to develop technology that would allow monitoring and inspections of orbital spacecraft to be fully automated satellites equipped with robotic devices. Crazy conspiracy theorists out of Russia saying the U.S. planned that recent satellite collision. Which, of course, brings into my mind, of course, the satellite collision, the planes crashing in New York, the subs colliding, French and UK, boats exploding, crazy tech things going on. Presidential directive opens the door for the release of anti-gravity technology information. That's by way of the Honolulu Exopolitics Examiner. However, from the Associated Press, $1 billion over budget and NASA gets $1 billion more from the stimulus. There is a report from the Government Accountability Office that notes, of course, NASA is sometimes the butt of jokes. And behind budget and behind schedule on most of their things. We note, of course, the recent explosion of their so-called global warming rocket, wasting millions. So that article and investigation from the Associated Press notes that NASA over budget, but they get even more billions from the stimulus. Marine jet crash into San Diego house blamed on a string of errors. That's from Wikinews and from the Washington Post. Task force urges broader role for nuclear labs. The nation's nuclear weapons laboratories would be spun out of the Energy Department and become the center of an independent agency for national security applications under a proposal to be released by a bipartisan task force formed by the Stimson Center. Stimson.org, their research organization devoted to security issues, changing the status and making wider use of Los Alamos, Lawrence Livermore, and Sandia National Laboratories for other research would help reestablish and assure the nation's global science and technology leadership in the 21st century. Many links, many questions, many bios on Francis Fragos Townsend and Lieutenant General Donald Carrick, as well as more information on the National Nuclear Security Administration, NNSA. But anytime we're talking about labs, I get a little nervous. These are where we see the viruses being infected, and oops, we didn't mean to send that out with a live bird flu virus. Oops. Bayer didn't mean to send out AIDS-contaminated Factor VIII drugs to everyone. Oh, it was just an incompetent mistake. It's not actually a part of an overarching eugenics depop agenda. Task force urges broader role for nuclear labs. 3D TV scheme seeks to replace regular TV. That's from EETimes.com. However, from Danger Room, Robo Beasts and Human Troops march together at last.
Hi there, I'm Jennifer Gunn from the Fort Benning Public Affairs Office, and you're watching the Benning Report. The robotics revolution is here. Since 9/11, the Army has effectively employed thousands of flying robots like the Raven and the Predator, and ground-based robots like the Talon and the Packbot. These modern marvels provide our troops with more situational awareness, greater lethality, and safety on the battlefield. In this edition of Livewire, R. Ron Andrus shows us an exciting new robot that may have a leg up on the competition, but certainly has potential for our troops in the field.
Well, Jen, it just might be the stuff of science fiction. Machines that walk like animals and humans. I'm out at the McKenna Map site where some incredible new technology is being tested and may be coming to a soldier near you.
Some may say it's the rise of the machines. The engineers and scientists at Boston Dynamics call it Big Dog. It's a 220-pound technological wonder made of metal, wires, sensors, actuators, hydraulic, electronics, you name it. And it looks and walks like, well, a big dog.
People and animals can use their legs to go anywhere on Earth. So we want to make a robot vehicle that can go anywhere a foot soldier can go. There's big robots that can go out and do things that tanks do. And there's a really small robot that can be used for IEDs, but there's no robot that can go where a foot soldier goes, helping him carry his load.
Big Dog was born out of a DARPA-funded project called LS3, or the Legged Squad Support System. It's an effort to develop a walking platform which can accompany dismounted soldiers and increase their combat capability.
They're pushing the envelope on what reality is as we know it.
Pushing the envelope on what reality is as we know it. Robo-troops, killer robots, coming soon to something near you. Another note is that DARPA would also like their own laboratory for some Afghanisims, you know, where they can run war games and video games and mix it all together. A disturbing one and an interesting one. Marine One blueprints and avionics leaked to Iran through peer-to-peer file-sharing network. This from Raw Story, as well as links to YouTube, the BBC, the Washington Post, WXPI, who broke the story originally. Marine One blueprints and avionics leaked to Iran through that nasty internet peer-to-peer.
President Obama is having some issues with his helicopter. First, the proposed new fleet of 28 Marine One helicopters is massively over budget, each one proposed at now costing more than Air Force One. That caused John McCain to publicly holler at the president at the White House Fiscal Responsibility Summit, whereupon President Obama took the wind right out of his sails by saying he had already asked the Defense Secretary, Bob Gates, to review the Marine One program. Now it appears the helicopters are at the center of a security breach. NBC's Pittsburgh affiliate WPXI reports that detailed files about the new high-tech Marine One were discovered at an IP address abroad in Iran. A Pennsylvania-based company which monitors peer-to-peer file-sharing networks found these sensitive files and then traced them back to the source, reportedly a computer at a defense contractor in Maryland. But how did these sensitive files get from that defense contractor to Iran and who knows where else? Joining us now is Rick Earle. He's an investigative reporter with WPXI in Pittsburgh. He broke this Marine One story on air. Mr. Earle, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Rachel, you're quite welcome. Pleasure to be here.
How did these blueprints from Marine One, this other sensitive information about the president's helicopter, end up on a computer abroad?
Well, that's the big question everybody here wants to know, and it appears that this company that's based just outside of Pittsburgh here, a company by the name of Tyversa, they monitor these file-sharing network, these file-sharing programs, and they were able to track this these blueprints from Marine One. They found them out there on the World Wide Web. They apparently had been downloaded on a computer that was using this file-sharing network. Now, those are file-sharing networks like LimeWire, BearShare, those networks that people use routinely to exchange music or videos. Apparently, someone with this...
I'm going to cut that one short. We'll cut that one short, of course, with him talking about those nasty LimeWire. And, of course, let's not forget Pirate Bay. Of course, awaiting the verdict on that trial April 17th. So there we have Marine One blueprints leaked to Iran through a peer-to-peer. There's a lot to go into that I now don't have time because I have to mention one. Bomb Squad moving into the Pentagon to stay. That's from Danger Room. And finally, SAIC won another $900 million contract with Stratcom. And that does it for Miltech and more. XEZ, FCS, Global TV, BattleBots, and NASA Billions, which now brings us to the big blue horse. And I looked, and behold, a big blue horse. Airports can be a tense and testy place even in the best of times. At Denver International Airport, you can add glow-in-the-dark eyes to the list of triggers for a traveler's angst.
30 million passengers a year headed to Denver International Airport pass beneath the hooves of the city's most controversial sculpture. The title? Mustang. It's been here for a year. 32 feet high, almost 4.5 tons of blue fiberglass with glowing eyes. It's the final work of New Mexico artist Luis Jimenez.
The only highway in and out of the airport goes right by the Mustang. You can't miss it. And just up the road at curbside check-in, everybody has an opinion.
I think it's pretty hideous.
Well, it's kind of cool to have a horse kind of at the airport.
And it just seems like coming to the airport, it should be representing Colorado.
I like it. I think they should maybe change the eye color.
And what about those eyes?
At night, though, it's a little creepy with the red lights.
The color, the glowing red eyes, I mean, I don't know, it's not good.
You know, I'm not going to knock it over in the middle of the night, but I think there are other places that would be better for it.
Denver real estate broker Rachel Halteen loves animals. Her office mate is Gromit the Husky. But Halteen has no love for the big blue horse. She started a webpage on Facebook, buybyebluemustang.com.
I was really overwhelmed by the fact that people really had thought about why they do or don't like it.
Nearly 1,000 comments.
Here's one from Mark in Northern Colorado. Ghastly, creepy to children, threatening to visitors. Anya, it's not that I'm offended by the Mustang, but I think it's ugly.
There's also a whole collection of goofy pictures on the site. With the help of Photoshop, people send in their variations on the Mustang theme. Aaron Trapp is responsible for Denver's public artworks. And yes, even she has an opinion on the Mustang.
I love it. I think it's fabulous.
Denver has more than 200 pieces of public art, including dancers. And this one called Indeterminate Line, near downtown. And the big blue bear peeking into the convention center. Since 2003, it's a $12 million program, most of it funded from public donations. Contributions and strong opinions are welcome.
We're always happy when people are talking about public art. We don't specifically commission things to be controversial, certainly, but the fact that people are looking at the Mustang and talking about it is really part of what we consider an integral piece of what we're trying to do.
Like all public art here, the Mustang site at the airport will be automatically reviewed after 5 years. So for now, the big blue horse with the glowing red eyes will continue to stand tall on the horizon. A $650,000 cultural lightning rod. Jack Chestnut, NBC News, Denver.
And behold, a big blue horse. I swiped that video and posted it up to youtube.com/mediamonarchy. However, returning to the article that when I saw it actually in print while I was at work on lunch break, saw it in the New York Times back on, I believe, Sunday or Monday of this past week, and behold, a big blue horse. Many in Denver just say nay. Again, making a joke of bizarre goings-on around DIA, Denver International Airport, or sometimes referred to as the New World Airport. Returning to the article, a statue of a giant male horse, electric-eyed, cobalt-blue and anatomically correct, was installed in February 2008 on the roadway approaching the terminal, and it's freaking out more than a few people. Haters of the work say that the Blue Mustang, as it is formerly known by the artist Luis Jimenez. Luis Jimenez was killed in 2006 when a section of the 9,000-pound fiberglass statue fell on him during construction. Luis Jimenez killed by his own big blue Mustang sculpture. So people say it's frightening or it's cursed by its role in Mr. Jimenez's death, or both. Supporters say the 32-foot-tall horse is a triumph, if only as a declaration of Denver's courage to go beyond easy-listening-style airport art that many cities use, like visual Dramamine, to soothe travelers' nerves. It's definitely achieved its purpose of being memorable, said Rachel Halteen, a real estate broker in Denver who started a page on Facebook last month to vent her horse anxieties. Buybuybluemustang.com. And then she found herself at the center of the debate. The original design called for a pull-off from the airport road with benches and ample room to contemplate the statue from all angles. After 9/11, however, the parking area idea was shelved for security reasons. That makes the big blue Mustang literally unapproachable. In the process of being personally attacked through email and through learning more about the piece, I've shifted gears from I don't think it's appropriate to let's try and understand it, Halton said, the sort of activist against this blue Mustang. Bye-bye, BlueMustang.com. Last two paragraphs. Here we get to the heart of the matter, if you will. But the controversy has also stirred up people in other ways. Conspiracies have floated around the internet for years about secret bunkers or caverns beneath the terminals at the Denver airport. Symbols of Freemasonry are also said to abound on airport floors and walls. It's brought out the conspiracy theorists who think there are aliens living under the airport, said Patricia Calhoun, the editor of Westword, an alternative weekly paper in Denver that is helping organize a Blue Mustang poetry slam in April to share a horse haiku as part of National Poetry Month. Patricia Calhoun, of course, bringing up aliens. As, of course, anytime you bring up disturbing questions or possible alternative theories about things, they like to throw in the aliens. Oh, well, if you think there's questions about 9/11 or JFK or Oklahoma City or about this phony financial collapse we're seeing right now, or the Pakistan cricket attack or the Mumbai attacks or whatever, you must think they're aliens, too. Painting with the wide brush that you're a nut. And so that anyone who discusses any of these topics may as well think that grays are in the deep underground military bases in Denver. There are UFOs. They just ain't alien. That's going to do it, my friends. As we've looked and beheld a big blue horse. However, as noted from the Holy Bible, as well as William Cooper, we looked and beheld a pale horse, and he who sat upon it was named Death, and hell followed with him. I mentioned this quickly, I'll note, before we wrap the show up, to Nathan, who's sitting here in the studio, who's in for his show, Following Media Monarchy, on the Portland Radio Authority. Mentioned the Denver airport, asked him if he had been there. He said no, but I have a friend who says there's weird underground things there. So this idea is out there, and people do know about it. And very soon, I swear, I'm going to take a trip just to Denver just to check out the airport and perhaps interview and investigate and see what I can see. Let's quite quickly now look at the list of creepy customers coming to MediaMonarchy.com in the past week. We have, out of West Point, New York, again, the Army Recreation Machine. Of course, we noted the Army Recruitment Arcade going up in malls around the country, but mostly in the Mid-Atlantic region so far. They were on MediaMonarchy.com, from what I can tell, a link sent through a Yahoo email, and they were reading Police State International, Propaganda, Danger, Threats, and Lists on MediaMonarchy.com. We had the DCMA.mil, Defense Contract Management Agency out of Alexandria, reading about U.S. rivals to make 9/11 appearance. That was, of course, when Obama and McCain went to grandstand at Ground Zero before the selection. The Seminole Tribe of Florida out of Miami googled Rockwell M4 Assault Rifle. The Virginia Military Institute out of Lexington were reading about 9/11 Remains, Appeals, Contradictions, and Gore Vidal. DePaul University out of Greencastle, Indiana googled Daily Show and Killer Robots. Headquarters USAISC, Army.mil, Police State International, Propaganda, Danger, Threats, and Lists. Hey, maybe they emailed it to the Army Recreation Machine. The University of Michigan Academic Affairs out of Ann Arbor googled World Monarch Crown Council of 13 Eugenics Think Tanks. Whew. CBS Corporation out of Agoura Hills, California googled Mitt Romney buys Clear Channel, and he did. Scripps Howard out of Akron, Ohio hit up MediaMonarchy.com, and I always have to say it's very heartening to see small regional media doing research, hitting up MediaMonarchy.com. Rockwell International Corporation, RockwellCollins.com, out of Cedar Rapids, Iowa, a private military contractor, googled black helicopters in Portland. Somebody at CBS in New York City Googled Media Monarchy. Someone at the United Nations Googled MediaMonarchy.com. Someone at the Institute for Defense Analyses out of Alexandria hit up Media Monarchy from looking at one of the numerous pictures of Global Hawk drones that I have posted up. The Pentagon out of Washington, D.C. Googled Future Combat Systems, States, Army, Money. And finally, SCAD, the Savannah College of Art and Design. Someone there in Savannah, Georgia, Googled Project Bluebeam Mind Control. Those are just some of the interesting characters visiting and investigating and sneaking into MediaMonarchy.com. That's going to do it for this episode 114 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's March 6, 2009. A couple quick things to mention real quick. Again, Portland Radio Authority moving into a new space. First episode in the new space, I believe, will be March 20th with episode 116. However, next week, episode 115, the last Media Monarchy episode from our old space, another Friday the 13th, the Ides of March, and one very special in-studio guest. It's all here. Nobody covers it like MediaMonarchy.com. News, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups, it's all here. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com. Telling you, reminding you, begging you, like my man Webster Griffin Tarpley says, get active or get radioactive. Take care.
Police would get him just the same.